You may kill me, but you may never insult me. Who am I? Captain Jack Sparrow.
Get the truth about movies on the movie show.
If he were telling the truth, he wouldn't have told us.
Tell them, Sparrow!
Unless, of course, he knew you wouldn't believe the truth, even if he told it to you.
Mm-hmm. Hello?
Joey, it's Ross. I need some help.
Help has come your way, because you are listening to the movie show.
Hello!
What is up?
Welcome to
this is the movie show.
Awesome podcast on Active FM. With your hosts,
Sash and Ryan.
Of course. And you guys are up for a solo movie. Yes.
Wow, Ryan. Nice bringing the title of the movie into the intro of our show.
Yes, making it big. Up front.
So today we're reviewing a film that is titled The Soloist. And it actually is a 2009 film, so it is quite a while ago. And I don't know how many people know about this film. I only knew of it because I think of the director, and then also the two main actors in it are quite main actors. So, but I don't know. Like, Ryan, did you ever see this film, hear about this film?
How did you come across with the director? As in, you found the movie because of the director?
Yeah, so the director of this film is Joe Wright, and he directed Pride and Prejudice. He also directed Darkest Hour, which was a very good film. We did a review on it. It was the one with Winston Churchill.
Yeah.
You know that film?
Yes.
So he's directed a lot of other films, like The Woman in the Window, I haven't watched. That's a 2021 film. He directed Hannah, which was 2011, which has Saoirse Ronan in it. And then there's a 2019 film called Swallow. That film looks very weird. This chick has the urge to swallow anything and everything.
What?
Like, literally. That's what the movie's about. A chick that likes swallowing things because she likes how it feels on her tongue and down her esophagus.
Okay. Someone is supposed to be a chef, I think, huh?
No, she swallows it's non-food items. It's like keys, and I'm sure the ones in...
Wow.
I haven't watched the movie. I watched the trailer because I saw he directed it. So I was like, oh, okay. And the main actress, it's not Jennifer Lawrence, but this actress looks exactly like Jennifer Lawrence, but it's not her. But so I was interested, but I never watched it because I just thought it looked whack.
Okay. Well, yeah, maybe coming up, eh? Maybe a future movie.
Yeah, so that's how I found this film. And I didn't expect it to be what it was. I must be honest, I didn't really have any expectation going in because I didn't watch the trailer and I didn't search the storyline. I saw that the two main actors is Robert Downey Jr. and Jamie Foxx. So I thought that looks like a good film to watch. Yeah. And then that was the reason I watched it. So I kind of didn't expect anything going into it. I didn't know what it was about or anything. I sort of knew it had something to do with music because, I mean, soloist, generally that's a musical term when someone does a solo, for example. So I thought there is something with music involved, but I didn't know. And yeah, watched it and I thoroughly enjoyed it. I must be honest. It's a different film. I've never watched anything like it before, even for a Joe Wright film. It didn't feel like Darkest Hour and it didn't feel like Pride and Prejudice. It had a completely new and fresh feel to it. So I really enjoyed this film. It was a good film.
So in other words, a good tip on finding a good movie, because usually when I try and look for a movie, I'm like looking in my whatever Showmax app and I'm scrolling across and you sit there like no. And the problem is that obviously you look at the movie, you judge the book by its cover.
Exactly, yeah.
But
by
now,
the title and poster.
Yeah. You're just like, that doesn't look good. That doesn't look good. And then I think to myself, I'm like, but most movies that I watch and I enjoy, the covers don't look good. So how the heck do I find a good movie? And obviously, we now have a good tip right there. Search by actor or director. So if you're in the mood for a good Robbie Downey Jr., just search for all the movies. And I think that's a very good tip. Wow.
Right. sometimes it doesn't go right. So, for example, my family and I did a Pirates of the Caribbean marathon. So we watched all five of them, thoroughly enjoyed all five of them. And then I was wondering, because personally, I haven't seen Johnny Depp in a movie in a while. So I thought, has he been acting? Has he not been acting? So I went and searched, and there was a 2019 or 18 film that he was in. I think it was 2019, called The Professor. So we watched it. We didn't even finish it. We stopped watching it. The whole movie's about this guy. He's a professor, and he gets told that he has cancer, and he basically has 6 months to live. So now he goes on this crazy, I don't even know what to call it, because he's dying. So he he's not even living his life. He starts taking drugs. Him and his wife are both having affairs, and they're both okay with it. One of his male students comes and gives him space cookies, and this is where we stopped watching the film. The male student says to him that he's gay, and he asks the professor, Johnny Depp, if he'd like to, you know, try out things with him, and that's where we just, you know, stopped. So sometimes it doesn't work, but most of the time it does work.
Right.
You just have to, yeah.
And I think that's, for viewing with family, I can just imagine, you know, having the kids all around, and next minute something breaks out and you're like, okay, the movie.
But another good tip is on IMDb, they have what's called Parent's Guide. So literally what you do is you just search the movie and you search Parent's Guide, look for IMDb, and it will literally tell you the nudity, the violence, the swearing, and if there's any like gory, you know, like blood and stuff like that. So they'll tell you that, they tell you exactly what is in the film, and then from there you can decide, do you want to watch it or do you not want to watch it? And they do tell you that they don't leave stuff out. So for example, even with Burn, I didn't watch Burn for a while because when I searched on IMDb, they actually said that there was a gay kiss in it. And I was like, who wants to watch a movie with a gay kiss in it? But the trailer looked good and all of that. Eventually, we were like, okay, let's watch it. And obviously, we were wary of the kiss. So we knew it was coming type of thing. And then, so even like small details like that, they'll tell you. And then from there, you can then make the decision. Is it worth watching or is it not? We didn't do that with The Professor. We probably should have, because we probably wouldn't have even started it.
For everyone, the movie was good. It was fine. I must say, I must give a big ups to, what's it? IMDb.
Yes.
They even tell you how many times a word is used. So they'll say there's 57 uses of this word. There's three times you see this, and there is one time where this happened. And you're like, wow, somebody's like, that's their day job, you know, working for that site. They watch movies all day and they have a piece of paper there and they write down.
That's when you hope they don't swear a lot, because then you don't have to write down. They said the F word 53 times.
9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. Wait, was that 15 or 16? Go back. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. So this film is a musical drama, but it's not a musical in the sense of they're singing and stuff. There's no singing in the film.
No breaks.
It's
now.
Musical, yes. It's a musical because Jamie Foxx's character plays the cello and the violin, and there's an orchestra in the film that plays at one point. So that's why it's classified as a musical. The whole story is this is the synopsis of the film. A journalist befriends a homeless, mentally ill street musician who possesses extraordinary talent. Inspired by his life story, he writes an acclaimed series of articles. Now, this film, and I didn't know this until the end of the movie, it's a true story. So this actually happened. It's a true story. They say, however, it is sugar-coated. So there are fictional aspects to the film. It's not that everything happened, you know, perfectly according to reality. They did sugarcoat it. And then they say, to its credit, the soloist is a far cry from the traditional movie portrayal of schizophrenics as murderous people with split personalities. Mr. Ayres, who's played by Jamie Foxx, is a gifted music student at the Juilliard School when he falls ill. So the whole film is about a student that went to Juilliard. His name is Mr. Ayres, and he battles with schizophrenia and ends up a homeless man, but he's got this amazing musical talent. And I actually searched, when I was doing research, I found the actual Steve Lopez, who,
yeah,
that's the character that Robert Downey Jr. plays, and then Nathaniel Ayers, who Jamie Foxx plays. And they actually show you footage of the actual Nathaniel Ayers playing. The one that I watched was the cello. I saw him play the cello.
Yeah,
and he is brilliant. He is so amazing.
Yeah.
He has like a natural talent for music. It's amazing. It really is.
It's actually quite cool, yeah. I know that they say often what happens, because I mean, you guys can actually go onto YouTube right now. That's right, and actually search Nathaniel Ayers. And the cool thing is that when I started watching him play, at first you're like, okay, but then like they say that when you'll like start off, and he'll be in his like schizophrenic like mode, but then like, you just give it a couple of seconds and like apparently he comes out of it and he starts playing like beautifully, because one of the things that they say is that it was for him like a way out of that chaos, that schizophrenic mind, the like split personality, where you could, a place where you could sit and like focus, playing music and enjoying it and that. So yeah, pretty amazing actually.
No, he is amazing. So just to give you info on Nathaniel Ayers, he was born on the 31st of January, 1951. He is 70 years old and he is still alive. He lives in Cleveland, Ohio in the United States. And the instruments that he plays is the double bass, which is that really big, big violin, if I could put it like that. So you have the cello and then you have the one that's bigger. That's the double bass. He plays double bass, violin, cello, drums, and piano. And he apparently taught himself all of these instruments,
which is crazy.
Do you know how hard it is to play any form of violin, cello, or double bass? It is so difficult. It is that I think they're one of the most hardest instruments to play, just because, so like on a guitar or on a piano, you can see the notes, because obviously the piano has keys and the guitar has frets. So you can see where you are on the instrument. Whereas with cello, violin, and double bass and viola, you don't have the frets, which means you have to memorize So he is really, he's awesome. Also, interestingly enough, Jamie Foxx, who plays Nathaniel Ayers, he already was classically trained on piano. He was trained on piano before this film, but he learned to play the cello for the film. So all the scenes where he's playing, it's not, you know how sometimes in movies they have the stunt musician. So you have the actor's face, but then their fingers, and they often don't show the two shots, or they don't show a long shot of the person playing, because it's generally not the actor playing the instruments. This film, Jamie Foxx played the cello.
Yeah, that's cool, eh?
Right? That is very cool. And then also, so I was watching a interview with the actual Steve Lopez and Nathaniel Ayers, and one of the places that Nathaniel Ayers loves going is there's a theater, it's a Disney-owned theater in, I think it is in LA, and he loves going there because there is an orchestra there that plays, and the conductor knows him very well. And also there's musicians there. I don't know. We're talking 2009, round about that stage. Obviously we're now sitting about 10 years later. So I don't know the current state of, what's happening. But at that time, there was this brilliant violinist who's a virtuoso oh my word, that guy could play the violin. And he would give Nathaniel Ayers lessons. And then also there was a pianist. So basically the musicians that were playing with the orchestra would also practice from time to time with the actual Nathaniel Ayers. And he could go sit in any rehearsal and watch them play, et cetera, et cetera. So he's very well known, and the people there, they like him. They've actually made friends with him. And when he comes in, they really enjoy being with him. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that is pretty awesome.
So there's a part in the film where they attend a rehearsal concert together. Now, one of the things I thought shame, Nathaniel. So in the film, you'll see Robert Downey Jr. invites Nathaniel Ayers to come to the theater. To come to the orchestra with him to actually attend an actual evening where the orchestra plays. But Nathaniel Ayers says that his response to him was, there's people who have paid money to come and watch this orchestra, and they shouldn't sit next to someone like me because I'm hopeless. Homeless.
That's
way more depressing than it was. He's homeless, not hopeless. But literally he said he didn't want to go because he just felt like people were paying money. He understood like almost the how prestigious that, you know, going to like the orchestra is. And for him, he as a homeless person didn't want to go there because he thought people are paying money for this and they shouldn't have to sit next to someone like me. So then what happened was they were able to organize that he goes and attended a rehearsal. So he did go. He actually went and attended the rehearsal. But in the film, you'll see that all the seats are covered with white canvas. So all of the seats in the theater are covered with white canvas. This is not cinematic imagery. So they didn't do this because it looked pretty on camera. That's not the reason they did this. This is actually done in some concert halls during rehearsals to reflect a more accurate sound as if the seats were being occupied.
Oh,
so they actually do it for sound reasons, right? Which is pretty cool.
I thought maybe they were putting the covers there so that, you know, keep the seats clean and stuff like that. That's crazy. I would have never thought, hey, Sashi, I think we need to do that. During sound check, we need to be putting covers over the seats as well. Wow, that's interesting.
Definitely. So also in that part of the film, the orchestra plays. And can I just say, the orchestra, it was beautiful. The music in this film, it's obviously all classical Beethoven.
Yeah.
It's all of that type of music. So if you're not much into classical music, then I don't know how much you'll like it. But I know for me as a musician, and I'm sure, Ryan, you felt the same. You just have a respect for that music because you understand how skilled you have to be as a musician to be able to play it. So it was really, I thoroughly enjoyed the music throughout the film. But at the rehearsal, what they do is the orchestra performs Beethoven. And what happens is the camera zooms in on Jamie Foxx. And then eventually it changes to Nathaniel's imagination. And his imagination has colors associated with the sounds. So as the music is playing, it literally turned into basically like the screen was just a screen full of colors at that point that went with the music. And apparently this refers to a neurological phenomenon called synesthesia, in which simulation of one's sensory or cognitive pathway leads to automatic involuntary experiences in a second sensory or cognitive pathway. It is known to have affected many popular musicians, painters, and authors like Stevie Wonder, Van Gogh, and Vladimir Nabokov. I don't know who that is. I think he might be an author. Mm-hmm. But that I thought was quite interesting. So that wasn't just a pretty part of the movie. That actually is like they've associated the colors with the music, et cetera, et cetera. And I thought that was... Because at that point, I was like, this is a very interesting take on, you know, the music and all of that.
It was actually well done. Just because from the point that, I mean, I don't remember hearing him explain what he sees or what he plays music. And, like, they brought it on. And, I mean, it was on for quite a while. I mean, you actually just sat there and there were these colors, like, you know, flashing on screen and stuff like that. I was just like, sure, this is actually very good. I was even there. I was even thinking to myself, damn, how did they do this? It looked like they shone different colored lights, sort of directly into the lens type of thing. And I mean, even with some of the timing, it went with some of the timing. So it was, even the colors that they used. So I'm sure, I mean, I don't know how many takes they had of that, but yeah, that was very interesting.
That was very interesting. This film is based on a movie. What did I just say? The film is based
on a movie. This movie is based on a movie.
No, it's based on a book.
Yes.
So Steve Lopez, he was actually a writer for the LA Times. And that's when when he came across Nathaniel is he then started writing about him, and that's how this whole story actually came about. But then Steve Lopez actually went on to write a book, and the writing of the book and also the selling of the film rights have helped pay Ayers' expenses and helped his sister, a mental health professional, set up a foundation for him. So the book and also not the film sales, it's they sold the rights for the book to make the movie, that all of those costs actually have helped Ayers, Nathaniel Ayers, and also his sister, who you do see in the film, and yeah, they were able to set up a foundation for him. And this was crazy. Do you know that most of the homeless people shown in the film are actually homeless?
Yeah.
That is so, they actually said they hired, so in the film, there's this homeless shelter called Lamp. They hired a lot of the homeless people that take refuge there to be a part of the film. And so what you see in the film, a lot of it is actually, it's not extras and actors, it's actually homeless people, which I thought is so cool because you give them a, do you understand what I'm saying? You're like, yeah, giving them a sense of purpose. And the in the interview I saw, they said hired, which for me makes, I do think they would have gotten paid out of
they
it, which
have. I
think
is also yeah, very nice. I would have imagined that they would have given money to, you know, definitely, Lamp, or yes, you know, the actual homeless shelter for, mm-hmm, you know, just to support them in that. And obviously within, yes, that, maybe they would have, you know, for all those people hanging outside there by the street, I would imagine they'd probably, you know, give them food every day. Because I mean, when you get money out of a film, it's not just, you know, a couple hundred bucks or a couple thousand, it's probably a couple million, maybe even a million, yeah, or two, you know. I mean, you look at how much the film spent being made, that yeah, for me, yeah, shame. But at least they gave him a good an opportunity. And I mean, if you think about it, what's quite amazing about what you just said is that they would have obviously not, it would have been very difficult to direct every person on what they must, yeah, do. So they probably, I would imagine they would have said, okay, guys, you know, just be on the street, be homeless. Our actors are going to come through. This is what they're going to do. Guys, don't, you know, just give them like a sort of kind of boundary line not to step over, yeah, but other than that, and then I mean, I'm sure afterwards, I don't know, do you think they would have like thrown them a big party or something, or some sort of like, you know, all right guys, we're having a big barbecue, you know, I don't know, some sort
I
of
definitely bash. Think so, yeah. I'm sure even like with the premiere and that, in fact I'm sure they did have, yeah, they say several members of the NAM community, a housing and care center for the mentally ill, appeared in the film and attended the Los Angeles premiere and after party.
You see?
And Nathaniel is a resident and beneficiary of LAMP. So that, yeah, is, yeah, that is, yeah, really cool.
I know that in one of the interviews with Nathaniel's sister, what I was actually quite amazed was that his sister actually said that, you know, he was always a person that was very neat, very tidy, very well groomed. Yes. And obviously him going to New York to go to the music school, seeing him coming back from New York and he was like really rugged and really like not groomed anymore. He was wearing like a very messy like top and, you know, sweater and that type of stuff. So it's actually quite amazing. You know, it actually makes me think because they say that obviously going to a school, the music school that he went to, you know, as gifted as he was, he would have gone to a very, like an excellent top quality school. They say, yeah, that it was a very a cutthroat type of school. You know, it's that type of, you know, hey, do your best or else get out of here type of thing. It makes me think that, you know, I wonder if it was maybe like that type of stress or him being overwhelmed or maybe him, I don't know, that maybe triggered, you know, something, you know, a schizophrenia within him. Because obviously in the beginning of the film, you see him, you get introduced to Nathaniel's, you know, out in the streets, Nathaniel. And the first thing you think is someone who acts weird, you know, oh no, this guy's on drugs or, you know, no, he's like taking something that's really bad for him, but shame. But meanwhile, in actual fact, he had a mental illness. In fact, for Jamie Foxx didn't, once he was actually very, he was second guessing whether he wanted to actually play this role. And then, I think it was the director who actually took him to the streets of LA because he said, no, you know, I've been down there, those streets, there's like dangerous people there. You know, it's just, it's not a good idea. I'm not sure if I want to do this. But then when he actually went down there and he spoke to some of the homeless people, because like we mentioned earlier on, is that, you know, there's that shelter, which is sort of like a home in that for homeless people who do have a mental illness. And then he spoke to a woman. He had a conversation with one of the women there, you know, as in one of the homeless women. And she explained her story. And he was just like very, very like shocked by it. He got very emotional about the fact of these people's lives and how they're living. Because what the woman said was that, you know, she got concerned with her mental illness when she looked at her children and she didn't even know who they were.
Yeah.
And immediately she called her sister and said, please come fetch the kids from me because there's something wrong. And that apparently really, really grabbed Jamie Foxx. And he was then, okay, yeah, definitely. And I thought that Jamie Foxx did a brilliant job. I mean, if you actually see the videos of Nathaniel and there's this like softness in the way that he talks and all that. And then you see Jamie Foxx and the way that he had been dressed, the way that he looks in this film, you're just like, wow, sure. Very, very well done. I mean, I was even thinking to myself, wait, this is Jamie Foxx. And I'm looking at this guy, even the way that his hair was done. I mean, Jamie Foxx, you don't usually notice the freckles on his nose and on his face. No. But in this movie, like, you actually see it. So, yeah, that was really
good. No, he did a brilliant job. He really did. He got the performance so close to the actual Nathaniel is. It's actually amazing.
Yeah.
He did a really good job. In the film, Steve Lopez, who's played by Robert Downey Jr., is portrayed as divorced. However, his real-life counterpart actually remains happily married, so he wasn't divorced. And Lopez, the actual Lopez, said, while having himself portrayed as recently single in the film was a bit weird, it was much more important to him that the filmmakers captured the themes of his articles rather than the absolute fact. So he actually didn't want... When the filmmakers approached the two of them and said, we want to add some fictional elements, for example, like Steve Lopez was divorced, they were actually happy with that because they didn't want it to be too close to home, and they were happy for the filmmakers to do what they wanted to do with it. Oh, also, yeah. This is the second time Robert Downey Jr. has portrayed a real-life reporter. He previously portrayed San Francisco Chronicle reporter Paul Avery in the film Zodiac, which is 2007, on the Zodiac killer. That film was so long. I watched that movie. Oh my goodness. I'm really sure that movie was like 3 hours long, you know, and we didn't expect it. So literally we put it on, and you know, when 3 hours later you're sitting there falling asleep, that literally was what was happening.
Sure.
So this film, The Soloist, is a lot lighter. Also, The Soloist has a way better ending than the Zodiac, but yeah. I thought this was also cool. So despite his distrust of two-dimensional images, Nathaniel Ayres did attend the premiere of the film in Los Angeles with his family, who flew in for the occasion. He really watches movies or television, but he did actually go to the premiere of The Soloist and watched it, which I thought was pretty cool.
That's very, very nice.
And then as of April 2009, Nathaniel Ayres apparently has a girlfriend and is doing reasonably well. That was according to Steve Lopez in 2009. And he also taught himself to play the flute.
Who?
Nathaniel Ayres.
Oh, the flute as well, yeah. Because obviously, as we see in the movie, something that they didn't really show in this movie was that obviously after Mr. Lopez wrote a column about Nathaniel, a lot of people had donated a lot of instruments. Obviously, the movie, we see a double bass coming through, but you know that a lot of people actually donated instruments, like, and that's obviously how he taught how he taught himself how to play, like, the trumpet. But one of the instruments that people donated was even a piano. a whole piano was donated to him, obviously included with strings that he needed, sheet music, and a whole lot of other instruments. And what was quite amazing is that he used that to teach himself music.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's a very, very good film. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I think one of the things that stood out for me most about this film is the relationship that they just portray between Steve Lopez and Nathaniel Ayers. Yeah. And even in interviews, you hear them say this, but they really brought it out in the film that they both needed each other. It wasn't that Nathaniel Ayers was homeless and so he needed Steve Lopez. Steve Lopez actually says he needed Nathaniel Ayers as much as Nathaniel Ayers needed him, because it was kind of like the whole commitment thing which they brought across in the film. It, yeah. Like for me, I got that he taught him how to, you know, stick through relationships and be patient with people. That's and true. I loved at the end of the film how it said that for a lot of people, mental illnesses can be cured just by good relationships. So just by yes. having someone there that actually it's proven that it's helped people with mental illness, which I thought was amazing and so encouraging. So for me, this film is really good. Also, one of the things Robert Downey Jr. said is, you know, films are entertainment, yes, but the genre of drama films are often the best movies to watch, just because they show you real life situations. It's not this fictional, you know, like superheroes or, you know, this guy almost died and then he didn't or whatever. It's often true life. It's real life. And I think a lot of dramas, obviously there's the ones that end sad, and I'm not talking about those ones, but like this film, they actually just like give hope. I think they almost spread like a message of hope, which is, I think, nice, because there's so much junk, if I can put it like that, being spread in the news and in the tabloids and all of that. Whereas when you get films coming out like this, it's actually, I think it just encourages people and it goes beyond just entertaining. It actually goes to, you know, let's tell stories that will inspire people to also, you know, reach out to someone in their world or, you know, be patient with relationships, or it's just encouraging and inspiring. So I really enjoyed the film, and I enjoy these type of this genre of film, if I can put it like that. And I think we need more movies like this, because they're good. I think they're good for everyone, and people should watch them for that reason.
Yeah, definitely agree.
So that was The Soloist. It's a very good film. Go watch it. But this has been The Movie Show right here on Active FM.
With your favorite hosts.
Yes, Ryan and Sash.
Yes, we are the ones. Yes.
Did you just refer to us as those people?
Yes, those people. Nothing wrong with that. But yes.
We will be back again next week with another awesome film review. But until then, keep watching movies and go watch The Soloist.
Yes.
Yeah. So this is us signing out.
Until next week. Cheerio.
Like what you're listening to? Follow us on Gab and Twitter at ActiveFM. Instagram at ActiveFM777 and Facebook at /ActiveFM.